compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, I'm back. I am going to share with you in a minute some data-driven results in terms of what studies show about the number one predictor of a divorce in a marriage. And I'm going to get to that right after we take a quick call from Lawrence in Kensington, Maryland. I said Kingston last time. Sorry, Lawrence. So just before the break, you called in. You mentioned that you, being a Protestant, nonetheless, you still listen to the program. And I'm really happy to hear that. And thank you for listening. Hope you'll listen forever. And you mentioned
My wife is she's Catholic, that's for sure.
Got it. Okay. Well, I'm happy to have you join us every morning. And you mentioned that you are on board with, you know, the fact that abortion is killing an innocent human life. And then you said, but you don't hear about capital punishment much at all, I guess, on my program. I don't know if you listen to the other programs, but that's a fair question. And I think that's where we left it. Is there anything more that you want to add to that?
No, that's it. I don't, as far as anti, I'm pro-life, period. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I still like to listen and hear, and maybe I will change that thought, but I just still concerned about abortions. This seems pretty bad to me, but so also killing other people for a crime they might have done or might not have done.
Right, right. Well, you know, that's maybe a good place to begin, and that is that there are many stories, and we've talked about them on this program any number of times, of people who are falsely accused or they're falsely convicted because of bad evidence or lying witnesses, etc., and people do get put to death. So, by all means, I am very sympathetic to that point of view. So, let me just share with you my own take on this issue. It used to be that I was pro-capital punishment, and I never really gave much thought to it. And the Catholic Church had no problem with capital punishment. And eventually, I began to shift in the direction that Pope John Paul II was going in when he said, let's make capital punishment practically non-existent. And he left the door open for it. And this is, I guess, the answer to your question, and that is the distinction, and maybe this is why we don't hear as much about capital punishment. First of all, the number of people who are executed in this country is extremely low, and many states have issued moratoriums on capital punishment. And so, I'm happy about that. So in proportion to the number of children who are killed through abortion on a daily basis, the figure I hear all the time is about 3,000 children a day. Some days more, some days a little bit less, but on average about 3,000 children die in abortion every day in the United States, whereas in the United States, Cyrus, can you look this up for me, the number of capital punishment, the executions in the United States in the last, I don't know, say a year? Can you look that up for me? Now, I'm going to throw a dart, Lawrence, and I'm going to guess that that number is under 100. It may be well under 100. It may be something very low. Cyrus will find out for us. But I think one of the reasons, practically speaking, that you hear more about abortion is that by far, 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 far more people are dying every day through abortion than are dying through capital punishment. So let's see, Cyrus, what have you got? Well, okay, so since the 1970s, 535 men and women have been executed. And in the last year, do I have the figure right, Cyrus?
It's 30? So in 2020, 17 prisoners were executed.
Okay.
In 2020.
Okay, right. So 17 prisoners executed in the U.S. in 2020 compared to 3,000 times 365. So you can see from that standpoint, Lawrence, why there's more attention given to abortion. But let me take it one step further. The other thing to remember is that abortion and capital punishment are not exactly the same thing. They don't have exactly the same, I don't want to say moral weight, but they're not exactly the same for this reason. That capital punishment, even though Pope Francis has made a point of saying, you know, it's impermissible, Pope John Paul II before him had said, let's just not have any capital punishment, let's make it practically non-existent. But historically, the church has always recognized that capital punishment in itself is not intrinsically evil. And we know that God ordained it. God commanded it. God insisted on it being used for certain crimes and sins. In the Old Testament, stoning to death was a very common way of executing somebody. I'm so glad that we don't have that anymore. But the church has recognized that there is a component of justice that is not contrary to God's law that can be seen in capital punishment. Now, the emphasis pastorally is strongly in the other direction now. Edward Faser, if you're interested, and maybe you are, there's a book by Dr. Edward Faser, F-E-S-E-R. It's called By Man Shall His Blood Be Shed, and that is a quote from the book of Genesis. But no, not Genesis. It's a quote from, I think it's Leviticus, but it is a treatise on the issue of capital punishment, and it takes into account the history and what does the Bible say and so forth. So for those who are interested in seeing how capital punishment is different from abortion, it is indeed a pro-life issue, but it's a different kind of pro-life issue. That would be a book that I think you would find interesting if you care to go deeper into that topic.
Okay, that book was
Yeah, the book is called By Man Shall His Blood Be Shed, and that is by Edward Faser, F-E-S-E-R. It looks like Fesser, but he pronounces it Faser, and he co-authored that with Joseph Bissett. But it is, I would say, for anyone to be truly up on the topic, this is a book that they would need to read to really be cognizant of all the details.
Okay. Appreciate all right. your time. Thank you very much. Good show.
You're most welcome. Thank you. And enjoy the weightlifting. All right. I want to get to this story here. Well, it's not really a story. It's just some reporting. And I've been telling you, I want to share with you, what is the number one predictor of divorce? I've shared it on the program before, but let's get back into it. Because we've been talking about the use of cursing and swearing at your spouse, and husbands who swear at their wives, call them four-letter word names, five-letter word names, and it doesn't just have to be the husband against the wife, but the wife against the husband, or both doing that together. And there are some researchers, John and Julie Gottman, G-O-T-T-M-A-N, and over 40 years they have been studying marriage and the interactions of couples with each other, and they have determined with great certitude that the absolute number one predictor of a divorce is, are you ready? Contempt. If the husband has contempt for the wife, even if it's passing, it doesn't have to be chronic, and if the wife has contempt for her husband, that is what they say is the kiss of death to a relationship. Let me share with you a little bit about this. It's one of the hardest things to get past once you've reached a feeling of this magnitude toward your partner. Now, when they say partner, let's just make it husband or wife, okay? Because it involves a profound sense of dehumanization. Contemptuous behavior includes things like eye rolling and sarcasm and name calling. These behaviors can land you permanently on the side of contempt. It is the single most corrosive behavior in a couple's relationship, and it is the number one predictor of divorce. Treating your husband or your wife with disrespect, disdain, mockery, name-calling, aggressive humor, sarcasm are all examples of contemptuous behavior. Gottman, Dr. Gottman, dubbed the negative communication patterns that ruin relationships as the four horsemen of the apocalypse, including criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, which is emotionally withdrawing from your husband or your wife, and contempt. And contempt, again, is the number one indicator. These communication patterns wreak havoc on relationships. They are all signs of disrespect. Having a lack of respect for your husband or your wife is at the heart of these behaviors. The definition of respect is a deep admiration for someone. But what else does respect mean in long-term relationships, they ask? Well, what respect means in a relationship is honoring your husband or your wife's feelings and needs, assigning importance to that person's desires, goals, thoughts, and behaviors. But keep in mind, it's got to be a two-way street. So if the wife is always demanding, You have to honor my feelings. You have to honor my needs. And you have to, you know, cater to my desires and my goals and my thoughts and my behaviors. But she's not willing to do that for the husband. It's never going to work. If one spouse is demanding these things but not willing to give them, it's not going to work. Disrespect is the exact opposite of these qualities. Being disrespectful can be evidenced as early as the first date. But for most people, it doesn't show up until much later in the relationship. So here are some signs of disrespect. And we're going to get a link to this article so you can read it for yourself. And a good idea would be to share it with others. A lack of regard for another's freedom and space. So an example, a woman gets angry with her husband for spending too much time with his guy friends. A man gets angry and annoyed when his wife spends too much time with her girlfriends. Point is, we all need a little personal space, even when you are married. Now, it has to be appropriate personal space, but that's what we're talking about here. If you make your husband or wife consistently late for important events because you're not on time, like for a wedding or a graduation ceremony, that's a lack of respect. When you have to express to your husband or your wife that it is vital to be on time for a particularly significant event and he or she continues to be late, that's a sign of disrespect. A lack of attentiveness to your husband or your wife's need for safety. Example, your husband likes to drive extremely fast with you in the car, taking turns at breakneck speed. Despite you saying that you don't feel safe, you'd like him to slow down. He continues to drive fast with you in the car. It's a sign of disrespect. It's a lack of attentiveness to someone's safety. Lack of consideration of boundaries. And this, by the way, gets to the heart of this issue of verbal violence in marriage where the husband and or the wife is swearing at the other. That is, talk about a boundary violation. That's a boundary violation. It's verbal. It's not physical. But it is tantamount, I would argue, to striking your spouse. You're just hitting him or her with words instead of fists. The need to always be right is another one. Now, the opposite of contempt in a marriage is manifested through these things, like listening. Listen to your husband or your wife. It's a sign of respect, and it will get you a closer connection with him or her. So they say we so often take advantage of those we love because we assume they will always be there for us. In truth, they will not. You will not always have each other. There will come a day when one or the other of you will leave this planet. So cherish your husband and your wife while you can. Far too often, we bring the best of ourselves to our work, friends, colleagues, children, even our hobbies, but to your husband or your wife, you bring the leftovers. You half listen. You take a glance at the text that they send you and you don't respond. You ignore them. Now, I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm just saying they're outlining some of these examples of how you can be dynamiting your marriage by in these little ways of showing contempt through these things. And it's really infuriating. Imagine how your wife or your husband must feel when you give your best attention to other people, but not to him or her. Watch your body language. Rolling your eyes, crossing your arms are signs that you're not open to listening. Make sure that your body language sends positive signals to your husband or your wife at all times so that they know when they're communicating with you that you are really engaged and interested, even if you don't agree. Put the phone down, get up from your computer, make eye contact, etc. Don't get negative. Words spoken with indifference or worse, with contempt, can create disconnection from your husband or your wife. Choose your words carefully. And by the way, this is underlined for emphasis. Think before you speak and choose your words carefully. It's better to take a long pause than to say something you'll regret later. Steer clear of sarcasm. Don't roll your eyes. Don't make mean-spirited jokes. Don't belittle or put down. Sarcasm, cynicism, name-calling, eye-rolling, mockery, and hostile humor are all examples of this. They say it's easier to come back and repair from other negative styles of communication in a relationship, but because contempt often involves belittling, infantilization, demeaning, and degrading your partner, all forms of abuse in various degrees, these relationships, when this is present, usually end. Be aware of the positive. Take a deep breath. Don't bring up the past. Work on yourself. Make yourself a better person, and good things will follow. So a lot of good stuff here. It's all true. And, you know, I've lived long enough on this planet and I've seen a few things and learned a few things. And I can say that what they're saying here is right on target. So I offer you that for your consideration. You know, maybe share it. Maybe read it together with your husband or your wife. 888-914-9149. And at the break, we'll have a link to that article for you. Thank you. Let's go to little Selena, who is in Sacramento. And Selena, they tell me that you're 9 years old. Is that right?
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What would you like to talk about?
Does God still have the devil?
Does God still what?
Does God still love the devil?
You know, the weird thing is that, yes, he does. He loves the devil in the sense that even though the devil doesn't love God, and even though the devil has turned away from God, it must really bother the devil that God still loves him because God keeps him in existence. So, yeah, God doesn't like what the devil does because the devil is evil, but God created him, not as a devil. Keep that in mind, Selena. God didn't create him as a devil. God didn't create anything that was bad. He created him as a good angel, but he turned away from God, and that's how he became the devil. But God created him because he knew that he would love him, and even though the devil turned against him, he still keeps him in existence. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
When you think about how much God loves us, it's really amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a really good question. Did you have any others before we have to take a break?
My mom has to go to work, so I think I have to hang up.
You're probably right. Okay. Good to talk to you, Selena, and tell your mom thank you for letting you talk to me. I will be right back with plenty more ahead, including your phone calls. We have a line that just opened up. You can grab that line that Selena was on by calling 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
I don't know if you have gone to relevantradio.com/nativity yet to sign up to be in the running for one of 200 nativity sets. These are big, beautiful outdoor nativity sets valued at $500. And we're giving away 200 of them absolutely free. You don't pay anything, not even shipping or handling. It just comes to you absolutely free if you are among the 200 that are selected. I don't know if you signed up for it yet, but I'm telling you, if you don't sign up by, what is the date, Cyrus? Is the 15th, I guess? Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's right. You have to the 15th.
And it's by midnight.
But don't wait. Time. Just do it now.
Yeah, because you'll forget, right? I mean, not that I've ever done that. Not that I've ever forgotten anything. But yeah, you want to do that. And that way you'll be in the running. And you very well may be one of the 200 people who will receive one of these beautiful, big outdoor nativity sets. Great way. It is a great way for you to evangelize. So check it out. Just go to relevantradio.com/nativity and you'll see it all there. Let's go to Colleen now in Milton, Wisconsin. Hi, Colleen.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I have to tell you, you absolutely, absolutely made my day yesterday. So here's the story. Uh-huh. So we have a daughter. Okay. Well, we have three daughters, but we have a daughter who died on October 4th, 2015 at the age of 30. And so yesterday morning when I said my prayers, I asked God, please help her to stay in touch with me. I've had several experiences, but not any for a while. And so, anyways, I prayed, please God, let her stay in touch with me. And so then I'm listening to you as I'm getting ready for work and so forth and so on, and you're telling the story about your grandkids and their cleanup song. And the next thing I know, you are playing
yeah.
Umbop by Hanson. And that was absolutely her number one favorite song as a teenager. And I know, I absolutely know that was God's answer to my prayer. That was her saying, hey, Mom, I'm okay. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for that, because it really meant a lot.
Oh, that is so touching. I'm so happy to hear that. I can only imagine the smile on your face when you heard that.
Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. I was dancing around my bedroom, and there wasn't even anybody in the house to hear me. So I had to be happy by myself. But I was.
How wonderful.
I was. So thank you so, so much.
That's like your daughter. It's like your daughter giving you a hug.
It is. It is. And I've had, over the years, a few experiences that truly indicate to me that she's okay and she's where she should be. And you have no idea what a relief and how important that knowledge is to a mother who loses a child. And I thought of the woman earlier who called and said she'd lost a child, and it's so, so hard. And I pray for her now, because it's a tough journey. It's a tough journey. So, at any rate, I had to share that with you because it just made my day.
I am so happy to hear that, Colleen. I'm delighted. This is going out to you, Colleen. Coming your way.
Thank you.
God bless you. You're welcome. God bless you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, let's crank this for a minute, Cyrus. All right. Hope and encouragement. That's what we're all about here on the Patrick Madrid Show. Wow. Let's go to John in Phoenix.
That made
me
smile. That's good.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that was
Sorry, John. Just stand by. I'll come to you in a second.
Sorry, John.
I mean, there are no coincidences. That wasn't a coincidence for Colleen.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, somebody could say, well, that's just a coincidence. I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I know it's not. It happens too often. It's too frequent, and it's too pinpoint perfect.
Yes.
It's too much to be a coincidence.
I agree. And, you know, I love those kinds of stories, because all the stuff swirling around behind the scenes that God is doing that we have no idea, no clue, unless somebody tells us how it affected. Like the young woman who just happened to tune in when I was talking about that book on hell. Those are not coincidences. I'm convinced of that, Cyrus.
Yeah, it's. I'm
You're
just
speechless.
I am.
Tell.
I'm smiling. I love it. That's great. Yeah.
Let's go to Phoenix and talk to John. Hi, John.
Hi. I had a Reddit thread that I posted that went viral yesterday, which is terrifying when it happened. I've never had that happen where it had a million views and people were freaking out. I posted about how there should be a stigma around divorce versus what we have now, where it's willy-nilly and parents can do whatever they want and then sleep around like teenagers, which is what I experienced growing up, unfortunately. I mean, my mom's working on her fourth marriage right now. And people were not happy. There were some people who were extremely outraged by me pushing the gold standard. In fact, the sub that I posted it in, unpopular opinion, went so far as to try and scrub me from Reddit after that had happened. They tried reporting me to the admins for things I didn't do. They basically tried to cancel me and silence me. But my question to you is, this is my question, in what many people were saying, we don't live in Disneyland. We live in a sinful, fallen world, although they didn't use those words. And the cold, harsh reality is that even though people should love each other and stay together for their kids and they should love their kids, that's not how things work out. And so do you think we're harming people by preaching the gold standard on morality, even if people are well known of falling well short of that gold standard? What are your thoughts?
I don't think we're harming people by preaching the gold standard. Jesus preached the gold standard, and he certainly was not here to harm anybody. He was here to free us from our sins and to help us become happy. So no, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's a good thing to do. And as evidenced by the pushback that you saw on Reddit, I mean, I haven't seen the thread. I'd love to see it. What's it called? How would I find it?
They took it down. It was called there should be a stigma around divorce, and they took it down. And then they not only took it down, they scrubbed any post I had ever made. It was on unpopular opinion, and this thing was trending all day. And then what's funny is I actually went back in and edited in things like Catholic teaching. Like I told people, like, hey, marriage is a sacrament. You know, this is something that is from God. Like, and because it had religious undertones, Catholic ones of all that. Oh my gosh, people were seething, foaming at the mouth. The fact that something like that could slip through the cracks, get a million views, 3,000 likes, 10 awards, you know, people really responded to this, and they did everything they could to try and shut me down from that. And it was just really bad.
Well, I shouldn't say it's a good thing. It's not a good thing, but it's a good way to expose their fear and the fact that they don't have an answer for what you're saying. I mean, when people shut you down and silence you, that's usually a sign that they don't know how to respond to you. So rather than try to wrestle with the issues that you're bringing up, they just want to silence you. So in a sense, you sort of won a victory. It's a backhanded kind of victory, but you exposed that, you exposed their insecurity, whoever they are, the mods, I guess. I don't know who makes those decisions. I'm sorry it happened to you, but I would see that as kind of a victory. You know, you showed them for what they really are. They can't take it. They can't handle it. So they have to run away from it. It's like the guy with his fingers in his ears saying, la, 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 I can't hear you, la, la, la. You know, it's like that kind of guy. So you won.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lighthearted thread, you know. There was lots of emojis I was making, you know, kind of being outlandish a little bit. But no, it was just interesting to see. So I just wanted to know your thoughts. Like I say, people were mad. Because I said marriage should be between two people who love each other, and they should all raise their family and stay together. And people say, yeah, well, that's not what, you know, reality is. And you know what? My parents got divorced, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me, and I couldn't be happier. You know, it's just interesting to see the responses.
I can imagine. Well, try it again, you know. Get a different name or a different IP address and try it again and see what happens.
All right. Well, thank you for your love.
All right, John. Interesting. Can you imagine that, Cyrus, putting up something gets a million views, and then because it's controversial, they take it down?
Yep, I can't imagine it.
Weird.
Yeah, I wait for that to happen to us all the time.
Did you know, Cyrus, that Janet Yellen, she's the Secretary of the Treasury. She's in part of this plan to mint, and I'm serious about this, to mint a $1 trillion platinum coin, because they want to, you know, with the debt ceiling looming, Axios is reporting here that this congressional solution to the debt ceiling problem could take weeks to implement, especially if the reconciliation process is used and time is running out. In case of emergency, a $1 trillion coin could be deployed to bridge any gap between the money that's running out and the debt ceiling being raised. The U.S. Mint already produces a 1 ounce platinum eagle and has no shortage of platinum blanks ready to use. Producing a $1 trillion eagle coin would require only the denomination to be changed. This to me is like mind games. It's a mind game. I mean, why do this? Why not just... I mean, why go through the pretext of minting a $1 trillion coin? You'll never get change for that. So, if you go to the biggest bank in the world, I'd like to make change for this $1 trillion coin, please.
Yeah, I'm at a loss.
Would you like that in 20s?
Right. Yeah, pull the truck around.
Why are they playing these games?
Yeah, it's so... I don't understand how... I guess I don't understand how it works. They're literally printing money. They're making it up.
Well, I mean, that's what the mint does. It literally prints money. Yeah. But, I mean, just the whole silliness of why not just write a check for $1 trillion?
Because then you wouldn't have a gold coin. Or a platinum coin.
Platinum.
And think of all the cool movies we're going to get where people try to steal it.
Yeah. All they'd have to do is Well, I don't know. I just, it's to me, it's an incomprehensible story. But they're actually doing it. They're actually going to mint a trillion-dollar coin, which to me is just a mind game. I scratch my head at this. I really don't understand it.
You know, some world leader is going to get that and have it on display.
A trillion-dollar coin. What could you buy with that?
Why?
By the way,
what does it mean?
There's an asteroid in deep space that is heading our way. It's known as the what is this thing called? It is they've got a name for it. I'm trying to find it. But the government, in particular NASA, is planning a mission.
We're going to throw a trillion-dollar coin at it?
Well, that's one option. But we're doing that. We're throwing that at the economy right now. So apparently they won't have that in time for this one. So here it is. It's called Diddy Moon. It almost sounds like a musical artist or something, doesn't it? So it's they're setting up this program. It's called the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART. The U.S. Space Agency is going to send the DART spacecraft to a pair of asteroids, the Didymos Binary, at 1:20 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on November 24th aboard a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. DART will smash in one of the two asteroids known as Diddy Moon at roughly 13,500 miles per hour on October 2nd, 2022. In doing so, it will change the speed of Diddy Moon a fraction of a percent, but they say that that will be enough so that NASA can measure its altered orbit. This will provide valuable input into future missions to deflect asteroids. This Diddy Moon is 524 feet wide, and blah, blah, blah. It just gives a bunch of statistics on it. It's coming relatively close to the Earth. Again, last time it was here, 2003, it came within 3.7 million miles. So that's not close. So they're going to, they should make a movie, maybe get Bruce Willis out of retirement, you know, and send a craft up there to deflect an asteroid. That would be a great premise for a movie, don't you think?
That's a good idea. And instead of, they wouldn't be like astronauts or scientists, they'd be, you know,
like regular
Joes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like guys who like work in oil rigs and things like that.
And if we could get like some, like Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, someone that likes explosions. Yeah.
I like this. Yeah. I like where you're going. What about Steve Buscemi? You think we could get him in on this?
Oh, I don't know.
He would be good.
I like Steve. I'm not going to make fun of him. That guy's cool.
I like Steve. Yeah, that's why I want him in the movie.
Oh, okay. I want to see him in more movies. Right?
Yeah. And there's got to be some kind of a love interest where, do you think anybody would die on this mission, or do you think they would come back safely?
I've never seen that movie. I've never seen it. It looked so bad.
What movie?
I don't even know what it's called. Is that one Armageddon?
It's one of those.
It's one of those. These movies always come out in pairs. Like every year there's a movie that comes out and there's like another movie exactly like it. And
so Armageddon was one, and there was another one.
And there was another one. Yeah. Yeah. Some asteroid is coming to destroy the Earth. Oh well, doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think if we could get Liv Tyler in this movie, that would be good. All right. So anyway, that's happening. So roughly this time next year, we'll know whether or not we were successful. Now, as I recall, in one of those movies, not only did they not succeed, but they broke it up into more parts. So there were more things that were going to hit the Earth or something like that.
I like how you worded that. I guess next year we'll know if we're successful.
We'll know.
We'll know one way or the other.
Maybe NASA should watch the movie first. Yeah. And then see what happens so they can adjust things accordingly.
That's the last place I want NASA to get their ideas from is Hollywood. No.
It's kind of looking like that right now. Let us go back to the phones. Let's go to Eric in Brownsville, Texas. Hi, Eric.
Hello. Hello, Patrick.
Hi there. Yes.
Hi. Yeah, I love your show. Listen to you every morning. I think you're brilliant. My question is, why do you think some people are able to overcome their past and others are defined by it?
Overcome their past, do you mean?
Yes, sir. Specifically relating to the calls you got earlier about spousal abuse, as far as growing up in homes where there's spousal abuse and then carrying that on into their marriages as adults.
Yeah.
Or in other cases where they grew up in an abusive home, but just do the opposite. They break the cycle. Well, why do you think that is?
That's a good question. It's a deep one. I don't know if I have the answer for it, but if I had to guess, I would say that some people, when the bell rings and they realize what they're doing and how it's causing harm, if they really want to stop, they ask God for help and they make an honest effort to stop, and they can break that cycle. But I think there are people, and I think each one of us can be like that in some ways when we sin. But for some people, they know, they see the problem, they know the problem, and they're just not willing to do it. They're not willing to do what it takes. You know, think about somebody maybe who, I don't know, it's hard to come up with an analogy on the fly, but I suppose we could, if we thought about it long enough, we could come up with some analogies where somebody realizes, you know, if I keep living this way, if I keep doing this, I'm going to get sick and I'll die. And then they just don't stop living that way. They get lazy, or it's sloth, or it's they enjoy what they're doing more than they enjoy the idea of being healthy and living longer. I have a feeling it's things like that where they just don't have the willpower to say, I'm going to stop this because it's bad for me. So they go with the flow, and eventually it destroys them.
I see. So it's a, you know, it's a matter of willpower, you think?
It's partly willpower, because some things are within our power to change. We all have the willpower, we all have the power, rather, the ability to say no to sin. No one's forcing us to sin. So if you say no to it, I mean, that's good, because you're exerting your will. But some sins are so tempting that we really, really need God's grace. We need it in all ways, of course, but for some things, it may be necessary to have a whole lot more grace, but you won't get the grace if you don't ask for it. And if you're not willing to stop what you're doing, then you won't ask for it and you won't get the grace. It's kind of a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. I really love your show. I think you're brilliant.
Thank you, Eric. You're very kind. Prone to exaggeration, I think, but you're very kind. We'll take a break and we'll be right back with more right after this. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
It's a snappy tune, Cyrus.
Yeah,
rather jaunty.
Whipping butter.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Whipping butter. This sounds to me like, I know it's not Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass, but I think they're channeling them.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Moving on. Let's go to Mike in Gallup, New Mexico. Hello, Mike.
Hello. Hello. How are you today?
I am well, sir. Welcome.
I am a practicing Catholic now. I'm your local over-the-road truck driver that calls in every now and then. I did go back to the church. I went to confession. My wife and I both went to confession, and we both are going to church again now.
Good.
My job allowed me to get home. I have an abortion question because, as a young man, another woman, of course, she had an abortion. I didn't want to do it, but the mother of the young lady wanted me to do it, and I did it. And of course, we didn't get married. But
when you say you did it, do you mean like you drove her to the abortion clinic and paid for it? Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Okay.
Can I ever be forgiven? The priest, you know, I still feel like it's between me and God, and not between the priest and God. But my penance doesn't match my sins.
So have you taken this to the sacrament of confession already?
No, I have not.
Okay. So yes, this is something that you need to do, and as soon as possible would be my advice, because life is unpredictable, right? You don't know when life will end. Yeah. So my advice would be to go to confession as soon as you can, or even make an appointment with a priest if you can. One of my best friends in the whole world is the bishop of your diocese, Bishop James Wall. And I don't know if you know Bishop Wall, but you know, it would be probably a really good experience for you if you were to make an appointment with one of the priests of the diocese and go to confession and explain to the priest what happened, explain that, you know, that there was some pressure. I was being pressured to do this and I was young and dumb. But even still, I know that what I did was seriously wrong, and I know it all the more so now, and you want to be forgiven. He'll completely understand, and you can
I did go to confession.
But did you bring up this sin?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. And I thought you said a minute ago you didn't. I'm sorry.
No, I did, and I brought this up, and I brought up some other things that, but I don't feel that the penance he told me to do was enough to. I just still feel dirty. You know, I guess I'll feel that way the rest of my life. I don't know.
It's a natural human reaction to have that sense of shame and deep regret and remorse. Those are all natural feelings, and you can channel those into a deeper repentance by offering them up to the Lord. Just remember, even though it doesn't always feel this way, just remember that objectively speaking, there's no sin you can commit that God can't forgive. In other words, your sin, let me put it this way, God's grace is stronger than your sin, and he wants to give you that grace. So the penance that the priest gave you is, yeah, I mean, how do you put a price tag on that? I mean, a human life, how do you... How could you ever do any kind of penance that's enough to offset the taking of an innocent human life? You can't. Right. So the penance is not proportionate to the sin.
But it perform is forgiven.
Yeah, you're forgiven. Perform the penance and then maybe choose other penance that you might want to make use of either for a time or maybe for the rest of your life. And that can go toward the restitution. We can never repay that debt, but it can help to repair the damage done. You're familiar with indulgences, right, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I would say seek out those prayers and other things that you can do that the church grants an indulgence for, and particularly a plenary indulgence. And when you receive a plenary indulgence under the right circumstances, all of the penance that would otherwise be due for the sins in your life is completely remitted.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that, I'm hopeful that that will give you some peace and comfort. Also, one last thing, Mike. There are some organizations like Rachel's Vineyard and Project Rachel that are designed to help people like you. I mean, it's women and men who have been hurt by abortion, and they're there to help you heal in the long term. So I would encourage you maybe to seek them out, Project Rachel or Rachel's Vineyard, and look, you know, check into getting some assistance in that regard for healing. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Thank
you, right, Mike. You're welcome, and welcome back to the Catholic Church. It's so exciting to hear that you've made your return. Very good. Let's go to Tom now in Stuart, Florida. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Patrick. I just wanted to make a suggestion on a caller that or a caller earlier that asked you how some people can get over situations and how other people, you know, have a harder time doing that.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention the Serenity Prayer and, you know, really giving up a situation, you know, to our Heavenly Father and asking His grace. And letting him just handle things. It's hard to let go of these things sometimes, but when you do let go, it seems like things work out a lot better. I just wanted to suggest that, and I hope that helps him.
Yeah, that's kind of you. So the prayer reads, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. That's the prayer you mean, right?
Yes, sir. And yeah. I wanted to say thank you to you and, of course, Cyrus. We have to mention him now.
Of course.
So you guys are doing a great job. Thank you so much for all
Thanks
you do.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Thank you. I appreciate that, as I'm sure Cyrus does as well. Cyrus, you're basking in the limelight these days.
Stop. Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Oh, the cult following that you're gathering around yourself, Cyrus. It is amazing. It is amazing. People ask about you when I go, what's Cyrus like? Is Cyrus here?
You have 3 minutes to take one more call.
I can either torment you for 3 minutes or I can
Please
take a call.
Take a call.
I'm tempted to torment you, but let's go to Farmington and talk to Mario. Hi, Mario.
How are you doing, Patrick? What I was calling about is, I'm glad you took my call. Is I was calling about the name of God. I mean, when we pray our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Does God actually have a name, or is God his name, or, you know, is that his title?
In fact, he gave his name to Moses in Exodus chapter 3. You can read the passage where Moses is being sent by God to go back to Egypt to rescue the Israelites. And Moses goes through one excuse after another about why he's not the man for the job and he can't do it. And eventually he runs out of excuses. And so the last resort, Moses says, is, well, another reason I can't do it is because when I go back to Egypt and they ask me, well, what's the name of this God who sent you? I don't know your name. So I can't go. So then God says, I am who am. Tell them I am sent you. So you read that in Exodus chapter 3. Now, that word, we don't really know exactly how to pronounce it because the Jews were very protective and careful. They wouldn't even write it down. In fact, even today in modern Hebrew, they don't even say the word God. They say Hashem. And Hashem just means the name. And they use that word as a substitute, even just for the word God. Now, that is not God's name, but he revealed it to Moses, and so it's lost through the ages. Now, we don't know exactly how it would be pronounced. We have the construction of the four consonants, YHWH is the way we would write it in English. But what exactly were the vowels? Now, we can come up with all the different ways that you could do it, and one of them would be the right way. We just don't know which one of them it is. So God's
Correct.
Name
At one
is...
time,
Go ahead.
At one time I heard somebody say, well, it was Yahweh, but like you said, it's pronunciation.
Right. In fact, here's another little tidbit. The Catholic Church actually, I think it was under Pope Benedict, discouraged from people from even saying that. Not that you did anything wrong, but to even just avoid saying that word Yahweh because, you know, out of respect for the name of God and not wanting to use it in any kind of frivolous way. Which is really refreshing to see the emphasis on the holiness of God's name. But we don't know for sure what the pronunciation is.
And right, because I mean, we were having that debate, and then people were saying, well, how do you know when you're taking the name of God in vain?
Well, you don't have to take God's name in vain, even if you just say the word God. You can do that
right.
in vain. People do it all the time. It's a terrible thing when they do that. Hey, Mario, I've got to run. I hope that's helpful to you. Cyrus, are we starting hour three? I'm in a time warp right now. We're starting hour three, aren't we?
That's right. You got one more hour left.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay, well, we'll do the final hour of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
Wow!